Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Parikamaham Shri Gurun Vaishnavam Shri Rupam Sagjatam Sagana Saraganatam Vithantam Sijivam Sadvaitam Savarutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitam Sha Hare Krishna Kuram Sindhu Jinda Bandhu Jigatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Mostute Atati Kanchan Gorangi Adi Veda Vaneshwari Abhrishvasitadevi Vandamami Haripre Vanchikapa Trupascha Kripa Sindhu Vivicha Adatana Pavanevyo Vaishnava Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shivasri Guru Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 1, Text Number 20. Kritavan kilkarmani
Kritavan kilkarmani
Saharamina Keshava
Saharamina Keshava
Atimarchani Bhagavan
Atimarchani Bhagavan
Buddha Kapita Manusha
Buddha Kapita Manusha
Kritavan
Kritavan
Done by Kilha, what? Karmani,
Karmani,
acts,
act.
Saha,
Saha,
along with, Ramena,
Ramena,
Balaram,
Balaram,
Keshavaha,
Keshavaha,
Shri Krishna,
Shri Krishna,
Atimadchani,
Atimadchani,
superhuman,
superhuman,
Bhagavan,
Bhagavan,
the personality of Godhead,
the personality of Godhead.
Gudaha,
masked as,
Kapita,
apparently,
Manushaha,
Manushaha,
a human being.
Human
Translation. Lord Sri Krishna, the personality of Godhead, along with Balaram, played like a human being, and so masked, he performed many superhuman acts. Translation responsibly. Lord Sri Krishna,
Lord Sri Krishna,
the personality of Godhead,
the personality of Godhead,
along with Balaram,
along with Balaram,
played like a human being,
played like a human being,
and so masked,
and so masked,
he performed many superhuman acts.
He performed many superhuman acts.
Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The doctrines of anthropomorphism and zoomorphism are never applicable to Sri Krishna or the personality of Godhead. The theory that a man becomes God by dint of penance and austerities is very much rampant nowadays, especially in India. I think somewhere he also writes, especially in Bengal. I think I've seen that in his book. Since Lord Ram, Lord Krishna, and Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu were detected by the sages and saints to be the personality of Godhead, as indicated in revealed scriptures, many unscrupulous men have created their own incarnations. This process of concocting an incarnation of God has become an ordinary business, especially in Bengal. It does. Any popular personality with a few traits of mystic powers will display some feat of jugglery and easily become an incarnation of Godhead by popular vote. Lord Sri Krishna was not that type of incarnation. He was actually the personality of Godhead from the very beginning of his appearance. He appeared before his so-called mother as four-armed Vishnu. Then, at the request of the mother, he became like a human child and at once left her for another devotee at Gokul, where he was accepted as the son of Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda Mata. Similarly, Sri Baladeva, the counterpart of Lord Sri Krishna, was also considered a human child born of another wife of Sri Vasudeva. In the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says that his birth and deeds are transcendental, and that anyone who is so fortunate as to know the transcendental nature of his birth and deeds will at once become liberated and eligible to return to the kingdom of God. So knowledge of the transcendental nature of the birth and deeds of Lord Sri Krishna is sufficient for liberation. In the Bhagavatam, the transcendental nature of the Lord is described in 9 cantos, and in the 10th canto his specific pastimes are taken up. All this becomes known as one's reading of this literature progresses. It is important to note here, however, that the Lord exhibited his divinity even from the lap of his mother, that his deeds are all superhuman. He lifted Govardhan Hill at the age of 7, and that all these acts definitely prove him to be actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yet, due to his mystic covering, he was always accepted as an ordinary human child by his so-called father and mother and other relatives. Whenever some Herculean task was performed by him, the father and mother took it otherwise, and they remained satisfied with unflinching filial love for their son. As such, the sages of Naimisharanya describe him as apparently resembling a human being, but actually he is the Supreme Almighty Personality of Godhead. I'll just read the verse again. Kritivan kilakarani saharamin nikishivaha adi marjani bhagavan buddha kapita manushaha. Lord Sri Krishna, the Personality of Godhead, along with Balaram, played like a human being, and so masked, he performed many superhuman acts. So it's interesting, of course, how Lord Sri Krishna has arranged this nice verse for Janmashtami, of all verses in the Bhagavatam. There are many hundreds of verses, and to get such an appropriate verse on Janmashtami simply by Krishna's arrangement proves that he's God. End of class. Yes, everyone can come in. Thanks, Tashiva. Especially near the doorway, come in. Make sure that, especially near the doorways, come in as far as possible. Yeah. This verse, in essence, the sages, in a nutshell, describe that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but at the same time, his position as the Supreme Personality of Godhead is masked by his own mystic potency, by his playing like a human being. So there are many opposing factors about Krishna's pastimes, many contradictory elements. it is because these contradictory elements of Krishna's pastimes are very significant. They're not accidental. They're purposeful manifestations of the Lord's expertise in performing activities that fulfill the desires of all living entities. Srila Prabhupada sometimes gives the example that the thief, everyone is praying to God, they're not necessarily praying to God, but they have some desire which they want fulfilled. So the thief, his desire, or sometimes he's even praying to God, that you help me and make sure that I can be successful, that tonight everyone is sleeping, I can sneak around, steal the valuable things and not get caught, and this way become very rich. And the householders, the honest householders, they're praying that, you know, the Supreme Lord, you protect us so that the thief is not successful and can't come and steal our belongings. So this is Krishna's position. He has to literally fulfill the desires of all living entities, and there are so many different opposing factors, but he is so expert that he does that. So these apparent contradictions, anomalies, opposing factors actually prove that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and yet to fulfill the desires of the atheists who want to believe there is no God, or that God can be killed, or that Krishna is an ordinary human being, it also fulfills their desires, because those apparent contradictions enable them to quite happily, too many contradictions, you know. How can he be God? He's a thief. You know, how can he be God? He did this, he did that, like that. So it actually allows them also to fulfill their desires. So yeah, Krishna is very, very, very expert. So in the previous verse, the sages, of course, were describing that they never tire of hearing the pastimes of the Lord. And in this verse here, the sages of Naimisharanya, speaking before Sudha Goswami, they're, of course, clarifying, you know, what are those pastimes. Ultimately, those pastimes refer to Krishna and Balaram's pastimes, who manifested many superhuman activities to prove that they are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and at the same time master their activities by their human-like behavior. So as Srila Prabhupada describes in the purport, the first nine cantos actually describe, lead up to this conclusion, the first nine cantos actually describe the transcendental nature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then in the tenth canto, these activities of the Lord with the various opposing factors are presented. But having realized in the first nine cantos that we are talking about the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the serious student of the science of God can actually proceed through the tenth canto without making the blunder of being bewildered by the contradictory factors that may appear due to his human-like pastimes. So, now, Srila Prabhupada states here that in the very beginning of this purport about the doctrines of anthropomorphism and zoomorphism. These doctrines, of course, attribute they people believe that although God is not a person, you can attribute human-like characteristics to God, or sometimes animal-like characteristics to the Supreme Lord. Or, you know, another way of looking at these philosophies is that an ordinary man, by dint of, you know, can become God by different austerities and penances, and gradually when it is seen that this person, oh, look at these austerities, look at these penances, yes, very, very elevated. And then by popular vote, oh yes, you can now claim to be God, we will accept you as God, like this. So this is, Srila Prabhupada says that Krishna is not one of those gods, because his pastimes actually prove that from the very, very beginning of his life, and we'll actually have a look at, we'll read something from the Krishna book about Krishna's actual birth. Prabhupada mentioned just very briefly that, you know, Krishna appeared with four arms, you know, fully decorated with jewels and what have you, which is, you know, very significant. That's the sort of thing you'd like to see in not something completely ordinary. You'd like to see some definite symptoms that a person is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He also cites the examples, of course, that even from the lap of his mother, so basically when Krishna was just a few months old, and breastfeeding from Mother Yashoda, he had not had time, of course, to perform any different yogic processes or mystic meditation, and yet he was powerful enough to kill different demons that were sent by Kamsa. And of course, some of those demons were so powerful that the various demigods in heaven were also, you know, quite fearful of them. So from his very birth, Krishna showed that actually, God is always God, and he should not have to display that he has to become God by some different processes. Srila Prabhupada mentions that this is the difference in the preface to the Krishna book. He says that this is actually the difference between real God and a God manufactured in a mystic factory, as he puts it. That was interesting. Sometimes I do different ceremonies. I did one recently, and the Shraddha, some people, they put a picture of the departed father on the little wooden platform. They put another little picture there, and I said, oh, who's that? And they said, oh, that is God. They were from Bengal. And they actually regularly visit the Mayapur temple. Anyway, I didn't have the opportunity to say anything during that ceremony, and I refrained. I put the garland around the picture, the Maha garland around the picture of the departed person, as I usually do. And just by chance, it happened to cover up completely that so-called God. So, so but, you know, it's quite astonishing. And, you know, you don't want to embarrass people, but you know, if you ask them, you know, how can you accept such a person as God? He's supposed to be an, you might know his name, he's supposed to be an incarnation of Lord Narayan. He passed away somewhere around about the 1940s. Do you know what his name is? Don't know his name? They told me his name, I forget what it was. So as Prabhupada said, this is just an ordinary affair these days. You know, just they must have some factory over there, and they manufacture these mystic, you know, this mystic factory, and they manufacture gods. They just pump them out like motor cars. So, for devotees, this Srimad Bhagavatam is extremely important because, people are foolishly worshipping an ordinary person as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and they're so foolish that they cannot distinguish. They cannot distinguish. As I said, these people were actually regular visitors to our Mayapur center, and even from childhood, they'd actually heard many of the different pastimes of the Lord. But because his activities are so human-like, it is a huge stumbling block. Therefore, this verse here, the explanation which is given by Srila Prabhupada, he gives explanation here. He further expands that explanation throughout the 9 cantos and in the 10th canto. It is extremely important for devotees to understand one, as Srila Prabhupada says, if they understand, if the devotees understand, they can understand that they've come to the liberated platform. If they understand this. That understanding is enough to become liberated from the material world, and that is the symptom. but also because if the devotees actually need to be able to very strongly present Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, so the people will actually benefit by worshipping God rather than dog. Mentioning anyone in particular. let's actually have a look at... we see, as Srila Prabhupada says, that in the first 9 cantos, it gives scientific knowledge of the transcendental nature of the Supreme Lord, and then in the 10th canto, we get see the different activities of the Supreme Lord and his birth, keeping in mind the transcendental nature of that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And as Srila Prabhupada also mentions in the Krishna book in the preface, that actually, you know, when you go through Sri Krishna's pastimes, you see that within all of history, right, even those who claim that this one is God and that one is God, if you look at the history of those persons, if you take all the so-called gods together and accumulate their opulences, their level of knowledge, wealth, renunciation, fame. I mean, some of these gods I've hardly heard of. I can't even remember his name, but anyway. Everyone knows Krishna, though. Is it beauty? You know, if you combine all their opulence, it still doesn't add up to a fraction, an atomic fraction of Krishna's opulences. And most of these so-called gods struggle to manifest even a tiny portion of one or two opulences. Some of them are definitely not beautiful. Again, we won't mention anyone's names or their hairstyle. Krishna not only simultaneously manifested all opulences, all 6, therefore Bhagavan is described here as Bhagavan, the Personality of Godhead, but he manifested them simultaneously and unlimitedly. So even if someone says, yes, he's God, but you compare, so what did he do and what did Krishna do? Oh, Is that it? You know, there's nothing. There's nothing. There's not much there. They're a little better sometimes than ordinary humans, given, but for the status of God, which is an unlimited leap, there's nothing. There's nothing there. On top of that, we also see that Krishna remained on this planet for 125 years. And he performed so many pastimes. There's so many pastimes that if you read his pastimes throughout your whole life, you can't come to the end of them. There's so many pastimes. Even, one of his pastimes, as Prabhupada mentions in the Krishna book, that every single one of his pastimes is unequaled in the history of humankind. So many, unlimited pastimes, and you just have to take one of them, it cannot be equaled. It is ludicrous for anyone to somehow present their paltry gods as somehow a competitor of Krishna. God means that there is no one equal to and no one greater to. So we're going to read a little bit from the Krishna book, we're going to look at just one of Krishna's pastimes, his birth pastime, just to examine these different principles. Just as a prelude, I'm going to read something from the Krishna book. Just as a prelude, I'll summarize different events that lead up to Krishna's birth. So, of course, in the beginning, the world was overburdened by many unnecessary armies by demoniac kings. Bhumi, the predominating deity of the earth in the shape of a cow, she approached Lord Brahma and she described the very pitiable condition of that had been created on earth for all living entities, including herself. Brahma and the demigods and Bhumi, they approached Lord Vishnu in Svetadvip, who lies on the milk ocean, and they chanted the Purusha Sukta prayers, the prayers offered to the Lord. apparently there was no response, but Lord Brahma, in his meditation, he personally heard the message of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he relayed that to the demigods. And he was told, the instruction was this, that actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead would appear as Krishna, as the son of Vasudeva. He asked the demigods that before he appeared, that the demigods, along with their wives, should appear in pious families to assist the Lord in his mission. That Ananta would first appear, Anantadeva. Later he would be also known as Sankusha. And also, that along with the appearance of the Lord, Maya, the Lord's external potency of Vishnu, would also appear. So having received that message, the demigods departed. Now, at some stage, Vasudeva, once upon a time, just after marrying Devaki, he was going home on the chariot, and Devaki's brother, the evil Kamsa, he was escorting his sister, as was the custom, and suddenly there was a voice from the sky, "Kamsa, you fool! You drive your sister's chariot, but the eighth child of your sister will kill you." So Kamsa, being the demon he was, he immediately grabbed hold of his sister's hair, pulled out his sword, and was about to kill her on the spot. So Vasudev, he reasoned with and preached Krishna consciousness. It's quite, you know, an achievement. Tukumseh, in order to pacify him. When that actually failed, Vasudev thought, okay, I must at least save Devaki. What happens to the children, that is in the hands of Providence, but first and foremost I must save Devaki. So he tried to convince Kamsa that Devaki was actually no threat. It was, you know, the actual eighth child that would be his death knell. And Vasudev actually promised that I'll actually deliver, you know, whatever children are born, whatever sons are born, I will deliver them to you. So actually, Kamsa allowed Vasudev to return home. So each year, of course, Vasudev and Devaki bore one child. Now, with the first child, Vasudev gave that child to Kamsa, and Kamsa, feeling very compassionate, he actually gave that child back. You know, this child is no danger. Now, Narada Muni, very eager to accelerate the Lord's appearance. And to do that, he actually approached Kamsa. And he told Kamsa that actually all the Yadus of Vrindavan and Mathura, they're actually demigods. So Kamsa, of course, Narada got the reaction he wanted, that Kamsa became alarmed. Oh, okay, so, you know, Vishnu is coming next. So he immediately arrested Vasudev and Devaki and put them in prison and shackled them in chains. So Vasudev and Devaki, they did give birth to a male child, Yili, and Kamsa, thus thinking that any of them, due to the conversation with Narada, that any of them could be Vishnu, he killed them one after another, or six of them, because Narada had also told Kamsa that in his previous birth he was Kalanimi, and that Vishnu had killed him. So Kamsa actually became, then he decided that the whole family in which Vishnu will appear, they are now my bitter enemies. So he made alliances with all the great, you know, powerful mystic demons of the world, and he harassed the various kings associated with the Yadu dynasty. So at this stage, Devaki's seventh pregnancy, Lord Anantadev, an expansion of Lord Sri Krishna. So he's actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Ananta Asesha. He appeared within the womb of Devaki. And Devaki became very fearful that Kamsa would kill this child. Krishna, understanding this, he ordered Yogamaya to appear and to transfer Ananta from Devaki's womb to Rahini's womb. Rahini was another wife of Vasudev, who was living in Gokul. Devaki was imprisoned in Mathura. Krishna was telling Yogamaya that when I appear as the son of Vasudev and Devaki, you will appear as the daughter of Nanda and Yasoda. Therefore, you know, sometimes we see that there's some people I see in Point Cook, they have a temple of Krishna and a very large deity of Durga as well. Very, very opulent temple in their home. And in Vrindavan, there's a temple like that with Krishna and temple of Durga. Because Durga is a sister, the youngest sister of Krishna. That Durga who appeared was actually Yogamaya, Krishna's spiritual potency, who arranged to transfer Balaram from the womb of Devaki to the womb of Rohini. But along with Yogamaya, exists also her counterpart Mahamaya or Durga, the material energy. And so materialistic people, they worship that Durga who is the material energy for material benefits. You know, people who are materialistic, they want some material benefits. They're not spiritually inclined. Sometimes the people that worship Krishna and Durga together are actually worshipping the material Durga for material benefits, and they're worshipping Krishna as in it with a mundane conception of Krishna, and also worshipping both for material benefits. But actually those who are transcendentalists, those who want transcendental elevation, they don't worship Durga, the material energy. They worship her original spiritual form as Yogamaya, or the spiritual energy, and they worship the spiritual energy along with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So they worship the Lord and His spiritual energy together. Those who, that is the process of worshipping for transcendental elevation. So there is a difference. So sometimes people may confuse that, you are worshipping, the sister or Yogamaya or Durga. Some people have sometimes they make very little distinction. You know, that you call Durga Yogamaya, we call her, you know, this one. They do not understand that there is a big difference. You know, these different names indicate that the expansions of the Lord's Shaktis are acting in completely different ways. Okay. So Lord Krishna explained to, also said to Yogamaya that Anantadev will later be known as Sankarshan. He has this attracting force. He will attract the two families, and he will also be known as Bala because he gives spiritual strength, and that spiritual strength one attains Ramana or bliss, so therefore he is known as Balaram. There are again people who completely misunderstand these descriptions, and they think that when the scriptures describe that you must depend upon Bala for spiritual elevation, they actually believe that you must become very physically strong. You must eat, you know, heaps, become very physically strong, fit and healthy. They somehow believe that their physical prowess is helpful for spiritual elevation, but actually your material condition has nothing to do with spiritual elevation. So anyway, Balaram was transferred from the womb of Devaki to Rohini, and people thought that Devaki must have had a miscarriage. Then Krishna entered the mind or the heart of Vasudev and was transferred to the mind or the heart of Devaki, and then he was also transferred to the womb of Devaki. The Acharyas point out, of course, that we can understand from this that, you know, Krishna's birth was not painful like an ordinary child. So Kamsa, he saw the distinct beauty of Devaki, that she was within her womb, there was the Supreme Lord, and he knew Vishnu has appeared. So as a demon, he considered the pros and cons of killing her. What would be the benefits? What would be the drawbacks? That is the mentality of the demon, you know, for his own self. And he decided that for his own benefit, it's better, you know, he won't kill her straight away. He'll wait for the child and kill the child. See the foolish thinking of, you know, demons. So Devaki, of course, knew Kamsa, and she was very fearful. So the various demigods used to come and they used to pray to the Supreme Lord for his pleasure, and they also used to console Devaki not to be fearful, that, you know, the Supreme Lord is appearing and this whole situation will be rectified. So that brings us up to the Krishna book. We'll be going to read about Krishna's birth. So at this stage, as Krishna was about to appear, there were auspicious signs in all directions. Astrologically, all the planets were lined up in the most auspicious. And there is a, as Srila Prabhupada points out, in the third chapter of the Krishna book, he says, in an astronomical treatise of the name Kamanikya, the constellations at the time of the appearance of Lord Krishna are very nicely described. So there's actually a little booklet. It is confirmed that the child born at that auspicious moment was the Supreme Brahman or the Absolute Truth. So astrologically, you can actually see that God has been born. You know, the science of astrology is so exacting. Of course, it is, it is a very minute science. Generally, most astrologers, including myself, just, you know, skip around the surface of it. But it's like scientists, you know, they can just go deeper and deeper and deeper into their, you know, levels of understanding of material existence. Astrologically, you can do that. They're just, you know, there's one layer and you just go a little deeper and you can look a little deeper. It's like Windows, you know, on a computer. You can, you know, you can, you have one screen and then you can zoom in and, you know, go like that. So, it's like that. But, you know, for children, they just look at the one window. They don't. So, there's actually, and similarly, you know, astrologically, they also pointed out that Srila Prabhupada, when he reached the age of 70, he would travel throughout the world and open 108 centers and be a great, you know, powerful proponent of religion all over the world. You know. Generally, the science is just used by karmis, and devotees therefore have very little to do with it. But one should not take it that it is just for karmis. Actually, most of our acharyas were great astrologers, like, you know, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and Bhaktisiddhanta. Some desisted from it, but not all of them gave it up. You know, quite often people quote Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur gave up astrology. That doesn't mean every Vaishnavacharya gave up astrology. Srila Prabhupada was very cautious of his devotees entering into astrology because he didn't want them to become dependent upon anything else except Krishna. So he's very strong in his statements. But still we should understand there is an aspect which is used by transcendentalists. So, there's a, you see, you can all see that very clearly from there. That is a picture of Krishna's astrology chart, just up in the corner there, as drawn by this Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Very, very nice chart he has. can be happily married, have lots of children, live a long life. And of course, he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, let us read. That Vasudev saw that wonderful child born as a baby with four hands, holding a conch shell, club, disc and lotus flower, decorated with the mark of Srivatsa, wearing the jeweled necklace of Kastuva stone, dressed in yellow silk, appearing dazzling like a bright blackish cloud, wearing a helmet bedecked with a Vaidurya stone, valuable bracelets, earrings and similar other ornaments all over his body, and beautified by an abundance of hair on his head. Which is another meaning of the name, Keshava. Due to the extraordinary features of the child, Vasudev was struck with wonder. How could a newly born child be so decorated? Vasudev could therefore understand that Lord Krishna had now appeared, and he became overpowered by the occasion. Vasudev very humbly wondered that although he was an ordinary living entity conditioned by material nature and was externally imprisoned by Kamsa, the all-pervading personality of Godhead, Vishnu or Krishna, had appeared as a child in his home, exactly in his original position. No earthly child is born with four hands, decorated with ornaments and nice clothing, fully equipped with all the signs of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Over and over again, Vasudeva glanced at his child and he considered how to celebrate this auspicious moment. So we see here that these are Krishna appeared like an ordinary human being, in that he appeared to take birth. For the atheist or the materialist, the fact that Krishna took birth means that he's an ordinary human being. But devotees consider he must be, displaying the pastimes, apparently an ordinary human being, because he's born with four arms, this child, fully dressed, fully decorated, helmet. So, this definitely proves, of course, that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, of course, we may, and here we take one pastime, we may take any other so-called incarnation and ask the nature of their birth, whether they can compare with Krishna. In any way, it's not possible. You won't find, there's no histories. There's no other history like this. It's only Krishna that manifests this extraordinary birth. Devaki, just a little prelude, of course. Devaki offered her prayers. And Krishna informed Vasudev and Devaki that previously they were Sutapa and Prishni, and he appeared in a partial expansion, an expansion of Krishna as Prishni Garbha. Next, in another millennium after that, they were Aditi and Kashyapa, and Lord Krishna appeared in his expansion as Vamanadeva. And now for this time he was appearing as Krishna, the full manifestation of the Supreme Lord, to Vasudeva and Devaki. And he said, I've actually appeared in this four-armed form just to convince you that I am the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And just to make sure they understood that. And of course they did, they were convinced. as anyone would be if your baby appeared from the womb like that. So he said to them that in this birth you'll go back to Godhead. Of course, Vasudeva and Devaki are Nityasiddha devotees. So though Krishna is saying that in this birth you'll go back to Godhead, they are eternally in the Dwarka Mathura portion of Goloka Vrindavan. They are eternally Krishna's mother and father in that mood. And their relationship, they have an eternal relationship with Krishna in Vatsalya or parentalhood, which is slightly, and that is also Nitya Siddha, that relationship. They also appreciate the fact that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Whereas Nanda and Yasoda, they are also eternally, they're Nitya Siddha devotees, eternally the in a parental relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but in the Vrindavan mood, and their mood of vatsalya or parental relationship, the conception that their son is God is absent. Their that their love for their son Krishna is so powerful that they can only see him as their son and not as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Even if that is displayed, their love just is it, my son, like that. And as Prabhupada points out, the purport of the this verse we're reading today, he says that whenever some Herculean task was performed by him, the father and mother took it otherwise. That's Nanda and Yasoda. They remained satisfied with unflinching filial love for their son. So, you know, when Krishna was holding up the Govardhan Hill, which is another pastime which shows that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, so for 7 days he lifted up the mountain at the age of 7 with his left hand with his little finger. So we have to compare, you know, who else in the history of mankind has lifted up a mountain ever, what to speak of holding it there. But even though he did that, Nanda Maharaj was thinking, well, actually I was holding it, that, you know, Krishna's thinking he's holding it up. I'll let him think like that because he's my son, but actually I was holding it up. And similarly, some of his cowherd boys, they're also thinking, you know, Krishna, yeah, we're lucky we were there, we were holding it up for Krishna, thinking that so strong. So their love was like that, that they just how could our son, you know, hold up a mountain like that? But they are Nitya Siddha. But you know, many of the different pastimes of the Lord, the confidentiality of Krishna, his pastimes, his associates, is actually kept hidden from atheistic persons, and therefore we see that Srimati Radharani's name is, you know, not mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam. But devotees, you know, they understand, you know, this is Srimati Radharani, you know, doing this and that. And they also understand from, you know, the word Radhanam, which appears in that section dealing with the Gopis of Vrindavanam, that, you know, it is referring to Radharani, who is the best of worshippers and lovers of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And so the confidentiality, because atheistic persons and materialistic persons, Krishna doesn't want them vilifying his dear associates. So he, you know, if people want to assume that yes, they are ordinary persons, he allows them to even go through the Bhagavatam and maintain that understanding. So Krishna, Vasudev and Devaki, they were very, very fearful of Kamsa. Again, here's where the pastime gets a little tricky. not for the devotees, but there's it certainly gives a wide scope for the materialists and the demons to assume Krishna as an ordinary person and that he is not God. And that also Vasudev and Devaki were ordinary persons because they were fearful. Krishna has just explained that he's just revealed himself as four-armed form. They've understood that he must be the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's declared that to them and they've accepted the Supreme Personality of Godhead has appeared, and yet they were so fearful of Kamsa that they're thinking, you know, how can we hide you? You know, perhaps if you, you know, reduce your arms to two, it might be easier to cover you. It might be easier to conceal from Kamsa, that maybe he'll think you're an ordinary baby. You know, so many things were going through their minds. Their fear was not based upon material fear. Their fear was actually an aspect of transcendental love. It is one of the symptoms of ecstatic emotion on the transcendental platform of transcendental bliss. Srila Prabhupada, just to explain that a little, Srila Prabhupada gives an example. Actually, Devaki herself was astonished. You know, why am I fearful? The Supreme Personality of Godhead is here, but I can't help being fearful for my son. And she's astonished. The Prabhupada said, similarly, we are also astonished. I mean, Prabhupada himself and his followers, Prabhupada would sometimes be fearful that the asuras, the demoniac persons, the atheistic persons, would somehow put an end to ISKCON. And he was fearful that, you know, will they be successful or will ISKCON go on despite their constant harassment, and they're constantly trying to, you know, undermine Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and they're constantly presenting these, you know, rascals as God, and they're what have you, and constantly giving false propaganda and what have you about the devotees and God and ISKCON. But Prabhupada, you know, his very name, Abhay Chalandai, one who is fearless, having taken shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. Prabhupada said, I'm astonished that I'm fearful for ISKCON. that fearfulness of Srila Prabhupada is not a material fear. It is an ecstatic emotion in relationship to, you know, that protective love of the Supreme Lord in the form even of the ISKCON. So Krishna, seeing that Devaki and Vasudev had this fear, out of their love, not wanting to disturb that love, he asked Vasudev to transfer him to Gokula. So actually, the shackles by the arrangement of Yogamaya, the shackles on Vasudev become loosened. The prison gates opened. All the prison guards fell asleep. And somehow or another, even the Jamuna later, you know, allowed Vasudev to cross. At the exact time that Vasudev was about to take baby Krishna, who had assumed a small baby-like form, in Gokul, Mother Yasoda, she also gave birth at the same time that Krishna was born in Mathura to Devaki. At the exact same time Krishna was born to Yasoda in Vrindavan, Gokul Vrindavan. The original two-armed form of Krishna, who never leaves Vrindavan, appeared as the son of Nanda and Yasoda at the exact same time that Krishna's expansion as Vasudev, the son of Vasudev, appeared in Mathura to Devaki. And as Krishna was about to take Vasudev Krishna from Mathura, at that time a daughter was born to Yasoda, who therefore is Krishna's twin sister, younger sister, and that daughter was Yogamaya. And it was her expansion that was later, when Vasudev went to Gokul, he placed Krishna, who entered within the Krishna of Yasoda. He took the Mahamaya expansion. Yogamaya remained hidden in Vrindavan. He took the expansion of Yogamaya back to Mathura, and it was that form that Kamsa took as the daughter and tried to kill him. So now here we've answered one question, in that the activities of the Supreme Lord definitely show that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Just a brief summary, that why does Krishna cover his position as the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Some of this is actually nicely explained in the third canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the second chapter, by Uddhava, when he is speaking to Mathura, that there are two main reasons. Krishna hides his position. He demonstrates that he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and at the same time, simultaneously, he hides that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So he's demonstrating he is the Supreme Person, and at the very same time, he's hiding it. So devotees like Vasudev, who have love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, mixed with Jnana and Aishvarya, an appreciation that he is the Supreme Lord, and knowledge that he is the Supreme Lord, they can see he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and they love him as their son. Others, like the materialists, you know, the materialist, that, as Prabhupada points out in the purport that of the third canto, they either try to kill God, they try to prove there is no God, or that Krishna is an ordinary person and not God. This is the business. This is their business. They actually make it's a mission they have. It's not just something they accidentally do. So Krishna deceives the materialistic persons by hiding his nature as the Supreme Personality of Godhead by performing so many activities that are just like an ordinary human being. But actually, he's not cheating them. One can't say, oh, then God is a cheat. He's not cheating them. They are in ignorance. In other words, they're like the owl. The owl shuts its eyes. The sun is there and the owl, you know, shuts its eyes. It won't look. The owl can open its eyes, but it keeps its... So the materialistic persons are like, I don't want to see. I don't want to see, you know, that he is God, that Krishna is God. And therefore, Krishna allows them to remain in ignorance. But that is their... So he is not deceiving them. They are deceiving themselves like the owl. No, I do not want to see. So that ignorance that, oh yes, Krishna is an ordinary person, they just, they will, you know, pounce upon. You know, the slightest little indication in the scriptures. Everything else they reject. Just like one time I was distributing books in Perth, back in the 1980s, and one Christian came up to me and says, I can prove from the Bhagavad Gita that Krishna is a demon. I said, really? And he said, yes. And I said, how can you? He said, from the Bhagavad Gita. So I showed him the Bhagavad Gita. He flicked through, and in the 10th canto, is, you know, where it says that, you know, amongst demons I am the devoted Prahlad. So there what? There's 700 verses in the Bhagavad Gita, and that's the only one, like the owl. There's 699 verses I can't see, but I'm absorbed in that one verse that God is a demon. That's a fact. What to speak of the Krishna book? There is, you know, there's so much information that if they want to, oh, there's so much information. So Krishna, you know, he allows them to cheat themselves. Whatever Krishna does, he's not actually just cheating people, he's actually giving instruction. Just like, again, in the third canto, in the second chapter, Srila Prabhupada describes that. Later on, Krishna himself, he comes back to when he killed Kamsa, and he came back and he said to his father, and he, you know, offered obeisances. He said, dear mother, dear father, you know, me and Balaram are really sorry. You know, we're not very good sons. We went away in fear of Kamsa, and because of that, we weren't able to, you know, serve you properly. So, of course, you know, the materialists take it. Oh, yes. Now, definitely. They don't see, you know, Krishna just behaving like such a humble, you know, considerate son. But what he is actually teaching the atheistic people is that even if you're God, you're still obliged to serve your mother and father. You still, no matter how great you become as a son or a daughter, you still have a debt to serve your parents, no matter how great, even you're God. And if that is true, even for ordinary persons, how much so should the atheist wake up to themselves and offer respects to the Supreme Father, Lord Sri Krishna? So, whatever Krishna does, he is doing for everyone's benefit. He's not cheating people to deprive anyone of anything. Furthermore, on the final point, Krishna wanted to the second reason why he displays human-like activities to hide his nature as the Supreme Personality of Godhead is because it maintains rasa. It maintains the you know, ecstatic loving affection of his pure devotees
on the platform of prema bhakti, pure love of God. Therefore, although Krishna was not actually afraid of Kamsa, we saw, you know, when Krishna was when he went to so he's about what 11 or so, 11 years old, he just dragged Kamsa, you know, big demon, dragged him down and smacked him, you know, and just killed him. And dragged him around the arena like a lion, you know, carries his prey. No difficulty. He wasn't fearful at all of Kamsa. And then he killed all the other demons and he killed his elephants and like this. Krishna was not fearful. But he allowed Vasudeva to carry him because he didn't want to disturb Vasudeva's affection that, oh, you know, I must look after my son. Vasudeva's feeling fearful, even though he knows he's the Supreme Personality, but he can't help think, but he's my son, I just, you know, I wouldn't want anything to happen to him. It's just, could not escape that emotion, that love. Srila Prabhupada describes that just as, you know, sometimes a father is wrestling with the children and sometimes the father, and of course I know as Prabhupada mentions this in his purports, that, you know, he would be doing this with his own children, you know, so you can imagine Prabhupada doing this with his little, you know, couple year old son. Prabhupada laying on the floor and his son, oh, I have beaten you, Papa, like this, you know. And Prabhupada, oh yes, I am defeated, you are so strong, like this, you know. So, you know, the father doesn't want to disturb the loving play of the, you know, with the father and the son. You know, the father, oh, no way, you beat me. You know? You weak little squirt, smack, you know, smack around. You know? So Krishna is like that. You know, he takes more pleasure. Yeah, let me hide my features as the Supreme Lord and enjoy the bondage. I'm bound by their love. Actually, there's two ways that you can bind someone. One is suffering and one is enjoying. A criminal is bound with chains and shackles. And that is a cause of suffering. Just like the materialist, they're bound by their attachment to the material world and the result is they suffer. The other way you can bind someone is, for instance, you can give them gifts. You can give a gentleman, you know, a nice dhoti and kurta and jacket and you know, some, you know, things like this. And that person becomes bound by your love, but that's very pleasurable. So there are two ways. So Krishna, the being bound by the love of the Brajavasis, he wears, like, you know, gifts, you know, that they're extremely pleasurable for him. That bondage, being bound by the love of the Brajavasis, is one of the reasons why he hides his position as the Supreme Lord and performs these human-like activities, because he relishes that love of the Brajavasis. So for these two different reasons, the Supreme Lord, even while displaying himself as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, at the same time he displayed these apparent ordinary human activities to fulfill the desires primarily of his pure devotees and also to bewilder the atheists. One who understands that, which is at least everyone in this room, is liberated. Not only that, you may be attracted to also develop that love by which you can bind the Supreme Personality of Godhead through your loving service. So I'll just leave it there. If anyone has any very quick questions or comments on that. And, I have to finish anyway, so...